This is Nathan, Nat and Sean.
On the podcast today, we catch up with the wonderful Rick Stein. What a delightful man.
Yeah, Dr. Michael Mosley joins us as well. He's about the blood sugar diet.
And tapeworms.
Yeah, and also from the bongo drum man. We talk about people that are missing that weren't missing.
You know what I mean?
Thank God he was okay.
Yeah.
And having a great time.
Bongos.
This is Nathan, Nat and Sean.
Time to catch up with one of our favourites, Rick Stein. Now, Rick, you're here for the Margaret River Gourmet Escape, which is happening this weekend. Margs is a pretty gorgeous spot, isn't it?
It certainly is. It's worth the trip. It really is, because it's just so much fun. I've done it about four times now, actually, I think.
Yeah.
Every time I think, well, this has got to be the last.
They won't have me back again.
They won't have me back again.
I mean, I never have my pants on. No. It's really crazy.
The places I've been putting crayfish, I tell you what, you think they'd wake up by now. What do you think about seafood? Because you're known as a seafood master, Rick. It's pretty good,
isn't it? Partial to it, I have to say.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been really good because I've obviously had to transfer the fish in a couple of recipes I'm doing down there, and I'm sport for choice. So I've gone for jewfish and snapper,
yes,
and some flathead.
Yeah,
and I'm looking forward to we're doing this barbecue on the beach, and I've got some local prawns which are going to split open lengthways and cook on the barbecue, and then just baste them with some olive oil and tarragon and a little bit of pernil.
That's going to be
amazing. I just don't get it. Why when you do something like that does it look amazing and beautiful and Instagram ready, but when I do something like that it looks like it's been dragged behind a truck for 7 miles? I don't get it.
I quite like not stuff that's been dragged around a truck for 7 miles, but I was down in David,
yeah,
and I was just thinking of that Thai food that he does is so, yeah, like it's straight out of a street market. And that's the way I like food to be, really. Just very, you know, I've got this sort of current problem back home in Padstow with the boys and girls in the kitchen. They've got into this way of chopping parsley by rolling it up,
yes, right? Yeah.
And slicing it into long, thin strands.
Yes.
And they think that's really, really special.
Yes.
And I had some salsa verde with it in the other day, and I said, why have you put lettuce in my salsa verde?
It's going to look rustic.
I hope you've had a word, told them to get their act together.
I did, but it's sort of like chefs are a breed on their own, and they love everything looking tidy. It's either got to be in neat little squares or long shards like this was. Yeah.
Hey, Rick, Nat did ask you about the seafoodie stuff, and you mentioned jewfish, and you're going to be cooking that. It's Castle Rock is where
the Gourmet Beach Barbecue.
Great spot.
Yeah.
Where does jewfish stand versus some of the best other fish around the world? Because if you got a place here in Perth and you order jewfish, it's $1 million, right? Because it's supposed to be brilliant.
Mm.
What other ones are great?
Well, I mean, what I'm always looking for, and we don't get much back in the UK, we get really thick fish like cod, like, you know, old-fashioned cod, not like rock cod or cods, yeah. But we don't have any fish with lots of flavour that come in really thick fillets like jewfish or blue eye. Or it's sort of, that's what I really like about it. And there's things like hapuka, which we use in the restaurant over in New South Wales for fish and chips.
Mm, yeah, really. Okay.
Yeah.
Or wild barramundi. It's all that sort of
So you're all about
fish.
The girth of the fish, aren't
the
you?
The girth. Absolutely.
You're like a girthy fish.
Girth matters.
Great. I forgot I shall use that.
Okay, we know how you stand on the girth of your fish.
Mm.
Let's talk about, where do you stand, what chip do you stand by these days?
Mm.
We went through the wedges phase, and now they're trying to show us that sweet potato chips are all the thing, and we've got like a thick cut and a French fry.
Hand cut with the skin still on.
Talk to me. What's your favourite chip right now?
Well, I've just been lucky enough to have a little brief holiday in Crete, in Greece, like the last week it was.
Yeah.
I think the best chips in the world are Greek, and they're normally hand cut, so they're very sort of
rusty.
You know,
uneven.
And cooked in olive oil. I mean, there is just no better. But I'm a bit of an old-fashioned person. I don't really like skin on chips. Doesn't work for me.
Yes.
But honestly, chips are it's no joke. They're one of the hardest things to get right, because potatoes are delicate little creatures.
Yes.
Do you
have a preferred potato that you use?
It wouldn't sort of coincide with your own types, but we use one called Maris Piper, which is what we use in all our fish and chip shops in the UK. I can't remember. I think it's Sebago or
Sebago.
That we use in New South Wales. So you just need a. It's generally a good chipping potato. Is also a good roasting potato.
Oh.
But it's really a matter of keeping them at the right temperature, which is about, I think it's about 10 degrees. Yeah. So somebody, I'm sure, ring and said, no, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
And then how many times do you cook it? Do you par cook it and then cook it again?
This whole thrice-cooking situation?
Double cook in our fish and chip shops, which is like you do just a blanch fry in one. We actually use dripping back in the
day.
Our parents used to have a dripping tin in the fridge, and it used to just be this like horrendous layer upon layer of different meals that you've had over the years.
It's like an archaeological dig.
It was.
But you know, nobody has dripping sandwiches anymore.
No, that's because we're not poor, Rick.
I know. But look at it, where the Italians have made a sort of joy out of poor people's food, like polenta, you know.
Yeah.
Sort of, maybe we should start a revival of dripping on bread.
Go on, sell it to me.
Yeah.
Sell it to me.
Start a dripping restaurant.
Always at the bottom of a sort of roast. There's always
Imagine how they'd write that up. Meals from the past.
Yes.
Collected with the juices of the future.
I wonder
God, do you want to come and write them?
Yeah. I'm just wondering how many stars it'd get from the Heart Foundation.
What, dripping on white bread?
Yeah. Hey, Rick, I was looking at this website and I've hit this button, but apparently you can rent out your beach house at Bannisters. Rick Stein's beach house is available for rent.
This is your actual beach house where your family goes for beach holidays.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not there all the time, you see.
Where's Bannisters? Where's this?
What? It's in Mollymook, next door to Ulladulla in southern New South Wales, about 3.5 hours drive south of Sydney.
Wait there. Come on. Wait there. Do you have any of your personal belongings in there? Because, Rick Stein.
I do. I keep them in a little lock-up cupboard.
Okay.
Oh, you know they're getting in there, don't you? You know that they are jimmying that lock and they haven't looked at all
your stuff.
Oh, my
God, how embarrassing. I've got lots of very, very cheap bottles of wine in there.
not only that, Rick, but I reckon there would be a few fans of yours who would think it would be great to get a little, intimate, like on the kitchen bench. Where Rick Stein cooks.
No.
In my early days in the kitchen at Padstow, a chef and one of the waitresses, I only found out after they left. Yes, they did it on my work.
There you go, Steve.
Of course they did.
It's what people want to do. Make sure you spray and wipe that thing when you go back there.
I'm the not so lazy Susan, Rick.
Rick, I'm worried about, is that a spa?
Oh,
is that
Rick,
a spa that I
Rick,
see?
Please tell me you've drained it. Rick.
Is that a spa or is that a plunge pool, Rick? What is it?
No, it's a... the jacuzzi. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
really? In an old rain tub. You know, they were going to just sort of get rid of it. And then we just said, no, that turn
it. There's not enough bleach in the world can keep that thing clean.
What do you put on the bed? Some mints and some baby oil? I mean, come on, Rick Stein. Get it together.
Well, my lips are sealed.
Yeah. Well, it looks like a lovely place.
We're not worried about what you're doing.
You know what? I'm sure your guest lips aren't sealed. Well, there you go, everyone. Rent it out. Do what you want there.
Whatever it is, it's been done before.
Yeah.
I can't believe we got a holiday house recommendation and how to cook chips out of one interview.
It's fantastic.
We
love the fact that you keep coming back for the Margaret River Gourmet Escape, Rick.
It's so nice to be here, I tell you. It really is. It's a bit chilly back home,
Thank you so much for talking to us this morning.
Lovely.
It's always a pleasure.
See you, buddy. See you,
Rick. Thanks, Rick.
Okay, this is Nathan, Nat and Sean.
We're just about to swing into the silly season, so seems like a really appropriate time to learn what we shouldn't be eating.
Okay, fun please.
Isn't this going to put a damper on things? Dr. Michael Mosley joins us. Michael.
Hi there. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to Perth.
Thank you.
Yep. Mm.
Dr. Mo, interesting book we got here. You say we can eat bacon. Thank you.
Yes. No, absolutely. Love bacon.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
This is the blood sugar diet book. And you also were a big... I remember watching the 60 Minutes episode with you where you test drove the intermittent fasting 5-2 diet as well. You put your body on the line, don't you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I like doing self-experimentation, probably one of the more extreme versions. I swallowed some tapeworm cysts and grew 3 large tapeworms inside me. My wife just sitting over there.
She looks disgusted.
Look, she remembers it well, fondly. But yeah.
Oh my God.
You grew a tapeworm in your body.
Yeah. What do they do when they're in you?
They grow.
And then what happens?
And then they shed segments and then they crawl out your bottom.
So why did you want to do that?
I was actually doing an experiment at the time in which I was testing whether you can detect when you have tapeworm in you before the tapeworm actually starts to come out.
And can you?
Yeah, we had to keep large samples of my poo in the freezer for a long period of time.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So for the layman person who doesn't keep their own poo in the freezer, how do you know?
When they start to crawl out your bum, then you know.
Is it true? Really?
Yeah, exactly.
Michael, segments is it true? If you had a piece of meat, and you held it underneath your bottom,
would they come out?
No,
because I have heard that too, Sean. So it's not that weird.
So then if the meat doesn't work, try burger.
So what do they like?
Chocolate bars. Yeah, exactly.
Get one of those sushi trains to go past with your pants down and just have different foods.
Yes, curry bars. There's an image. Is it true that you can put a piece of tape over your butt and you'll see whether they've come out or not? Is that true?
No, I mean, basically, it's not as subtle as that. They actually come out and you can see them.
So they come out like,
and they're wriggling around.
Hey, how are you? Hi, guys.
It's a party in here.
Exactly.
Michael, they get pretty long, don't they?
They can get up to about 10 metres.
So wait there. If one comes out, could that be a 10-metre journey?
No, it's basically, they come out in segments, little segments break off and then they kind of crawl out.
Is it true? It used to be a bit of a myth that if you had tapeworm, it was a weight loss initiative.
That was a myth, because what they do is they also control your appetite. They're quite clever. So they particularly encourage you to eat carby things like beer and chocolate.
So they're piss heads.
Yes. They're like university students.
They eat like they're going through a breakup.
How fascinating.
That is so interesting. Now, Michael, with all the dieting, you've got your blood sugar diet book, which I've got in your hands at the moment. People are always into different fads all the time. Now, why is this one the one that we can look at and take seriously?
This one is based on a lot of science. It's based on about 20 years of science. The reason I wrote it is because 4 years ago, I discovered I was a type 2 diabetic. My blood sugar levels were in the diabetic range.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to go on medication, so I went around the world looking for alternatives, and what I came across then was intermittent fasting, the 5-2 diet, and I lost about 10 kilos and my blood sugars went back to normal. This book is an extension of that, because this is based on research which shows that if you go on a 800 calorie diet for 8 weeks, then you lose an average of 14 kilos over that period.
Wow.
But 800 calories, are you talking about every single day?
It's like three pieces of lettuce, mate.
That's pretty low.
If you read the recipes there, each one of those, and that includes a sort of fry up for breakfast, that adds up to 800 calories.
Yeah, right.
You can get a lot of food for 800 calories if you choose the right food.
Yeah.
And you also have to choose the food that's going to keep you full. And that's what these recipes are all about. They're all about kind of feeling, you know, getting your hunger away and getting foods that make you full. And these have been really thoroughly road tested.
Yeah.
So I'm very confident about them. They have been through clinical trials. And as I said, the first week can be quite tough because
the carb thing and the sugar.
And your tapeworm's hungry.
Exactly.
Tapeworm's like starving.
But what is really amazing is how quickly you adapt. I mean, Claire is a GP sitting over here in the corner, and she puts a lot of patients of hers on this, and she sees miraculous transformations, people who come off insulin, people who shed loads of weight in a really short period of time. It's not just for people who are diabetic, but there are an awful lot of people who are overweight or who just simply have high blood sugar levels. And there's this idea that you should lose weight slowly. Actually, all the evidence is you're better off losing
it fast.
Just
get it off.
Just get
it off. Exactly. But it's much more encouraging, you know.
I was really interested, and I think we all were, when we open up the book where you've got some of the things we can eat. Absolutely. And to have the fry up right. So in my mind, having fried eggs and bacon and all that, that was not going to do me the world
of
good.
We've been conditioned to think that high fat is bad.
But one of our friends we had breakfast with one time, she just started chowing down one particular day on all this fried...
She basically had fried up Noah's Ark and she was just eating her way through
meat,
it.
Meat, meat and more meat.
Yeah, and we were blown away. And she reckons she felt better.
And she looks fantastic.
Yeah, she does look amazing.
I don't think you can, you know, just have fry ups all the time. There is a whole range of stuff, but broadly speaking, where the science has moved is away from saying that fat is bad to saying that some fats are not great. But what that is aiming at is what I'd describe as a Mediterranean diet. So lots of olive oil, lots of nuts, lots of fish, lots of tasty things as well. Occasional bits of bacon, but you're not going to be eating bacon every day. Less carbs. What so things like pasta and potatoes and things like that.
Yeah,
less
so the highly refined carbohydrates and stuff.
But I love pasta.
So
There are alternatives. There are foods. Honestly, there are.
I saw that zucchini thing that you made. Yeah. It looks like sort of a pasta. That looks great, and that looks filling too.
It looks filling, and you absolutely can't tell the difference. It has actually a nicer texture to it.
Okay. Mm.
Now Mediterraneans are quite fond of a glass of wine.
Yeah.
Can you still do that?
Absolutely. I mean,
your tapeworm says yes.
Tapeworm very enthusiastic about it.
So wine, I'm guessing you're going to say in moderation.
Well, in the initial period, unfortunately, wine has a fair amount. Beer, no. Beer is sort of just liquid sugar. But wine, you know, it has got calories in it. So you've got 140 calories in a small glass. So initially, it's better off if you're cutting back or really only doing it a couple of days a week.
When you've only got 800, quite. 140 on the glass.
Am I going to have four glasses of wine or am I going to eat? It's a challenge, isn't it?
Hang on, think about it.
But it is part, as you say, of the Mediterranean style. And there's a kind of maintenance thing because what I write about is how you keep the weight off once you've lost it, because that's absolutely critical. And the evidence is quite strong that, again, it's sort of a glass or two of red wine rather than a bottle or two of red wine.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
This is Nathan, Nat and Sean.
So I want to talk about a scary time in our childhoods. Quite honest, it really stunk. I want to know if you went through it where you live. It was our parents all went on the cabbage diet, where they just ate nothing but cabbage all day, every day for a long period of time.
Yeah.
Why would everyone, would that have ever been a benefit?
Well, I mean, cabbage is quite good for you, isn't it? But the idea the problem with cabbage is it's also very rich in sulfur. And so what you're really feeding.
Heads the stench, yes.
Heads the stench. So you're feeding the bacteria in your gut that like sulfur, and they also produce an awful lot of gas.
Methane. It's a terrible time for us.
It did. And somebody actually measured it and they found out the average person passes about 3 litres of gas a day.
And, I'm not the average.
You're
person.
Above average, Sean.
But when you were on the cabbage diet, it was something like 5 times that amount.
So how terrifying.
You could have powered your house on it. You know, if you'd
better.
What's worth a small country in it?
Hey, Mike, you were talking about with the Mediterranean diet, right? We're taking a lot of our cues from there. But Mediterranean people normally have a lot of pastas, but saying.
But that's not in the traditional. Okay, there's what. I mean, frankly, Mediterranean people these days, they eat the same old junk that everyone else eats. And that's why they got enormously fat as well. If you look at the Greeks now and the Italians, unfortunately, they're pretty well as fat as any other European. The traditional one did not have those things in it, or it had it in very great moderation, or they were doing huge amounts of exercise.
Yeah, right. So they were manual
workers. If you do a lot of exercise, you can burn almost anything. The Mediterranean diet, which I describe in this book, is based on big clinical trials they did in Spain over a period of about 8 years where they got people. And those are rich in olive oil, rich in nuts. There's virtually no pasta in it. There is some bread, but it's very whole grainy. It's got a lot of fish in it. It's got some meat in it and lamb and things like that. But it's got virtually no sugar in it and almost no carbs in it.
Well, what about the Asians, right? Because a rice diet, which we've all been all over, we've all been to those countries.
And they're living to like 141 years old and stuff like that.
Okay, so where do we sit on that? Like white rice is what they
had really bad, unfortunately. So the Asians were fine as long as they were doing huge amounts of manual labour and hauling rickshaws and things like that. But these days.
I haven't pulled a rickshaw for years.
But these days, when they're all cruising around in cars, yes. They have a massive problem. So in China now, there are 100 million diabetics, and around half the population have what's called pre-diabetes. Their blood sugar levels are off the score. I was in Vietnam recently, where they're cutting off more legs because of type 2 diabetes than during the height of the Vietnam War.
Wow.
Because it's gone from almost nothing to 10%. So their lifestyle is now completely ill-suited, and what they're eating is completely ill-suited.
To their current
lifestyle. White rice, you know that thing used to be with, you know, you go out for a Chinese and then you felt hungry 2 hours later.
Yeah.
That's because white rice is essentially sugar.
What about brown rice?
Brown rice is better, but most brown, you need really sort of the thick, crunchy stuff.
Okay, not the unfun stuff.
It's not, it's just stuff which takes a while to cook. Unfortunately, white rice is like potatoes. It has pretty much exactly the same effect on your system as eating a couple of tablespoons of sugar. Mm. Basically, it gets converted straight away, bang, into sugar in your blood. Your blood sugars shoot up. Then your body pumps out insulin. Your blood sugars come crashing down. You feel really hungry.
Oh, Dr. Michael, has anyone ever told you your voice is bewitching?
You can tell him anything.
Honestly, I would listen to audiobooks of you. If you were my GPS voice, I'd be happy. Great voice.
Dr. Mark, what did you do your thesis on?
I studied medicine at the Royal Free in London.
What did you have to write your...
We didn't have to, in the UK, we don't have to do a dissertation.
You don't have to do a thesis.
A book report on Harry Potter.
I did do a study on the effects of immersion in cold water, because that just kind of interested me.
Yeah.
And I've done a few self-experiments along those lines as well.
So, we know lots of athletes that immerse themselves in cold water Does it make any difference?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a very good idea.
Yeah, your balls go up to your neck.
I hadn't noticed.
So a lot of my friends from medical school are actually here in Perth now. So I'm just staying with
them.
Yeah, yeah. So one of them has actually set up a scheme for helping people who are wanting to do the blood sugar diet. So if you go and Google them, he's running an online scheme, but there's a bunch of doctors who can help you as well.
So who's he?
Fantastic.
He's a guy called Tim Haggett. So,
Tim.
Hi, brother.
Yeah, exactly. So there are about 10, actually, of our friends from medical school who are in Perth now.
Oh, my God.
They fled from the UK back in the 80s when things were grim.
Do they know about skin cancer?
They don't know about skin cancer. One of them is actually a skin cancer specialist.
Oh, there you go.
So I'm planning on taking this funny-looking thing on my head to this mole here. I'm slightly worried about to her. Yeah.
You look a treat, mate. Dr. Michael, this has been amazing. This has been really good to hear.
If we were going to pick one, would we pick this one or the 5 and 2?
I think probably this one because what it does is it updates it. Essentially, it's a 3-stage program. So you can either do the 800 calories, which obviously you're going to lead to very rapid weight loss. But some people kind of find that a struggle and they may prefer the 5-2 approach, where essentially you eat 800 calories for 2 days a week or maybe 3 days a week. And then the other days you eat kind of normal amount of calories, but eating a Mediterranean style. And then there's a kind of maintenance dose. So this is kind of an evolution of what I've learned over the last 4 years.
It's 150 recipes, and I was excited to, because I love bacon and broccoli, and there's a bacon and broccoli fry up.
Yeah.
Yay! That's exactly what I want.
Thank you so much for coming in. The books, obviously, are in all good bookshops and some of the dodgy ones as well as we speak. Would you recommend the 8 weeks leading into Christmas to be a good time to start?
Absolutely. And obviously, after Christmas is even better, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Thank you so much. Nice.
Sean. We're all waiting to see what happened with this bloke that went on the Tinder date and then 2 days later left with the girl, apparently called Anita, over to Bali and then was
never seen again.
Back and then was apparently had left and then gone to somewhere else. And
people were really concerned.
They were.
Because of the lack of contact. And in this day and age, you do just expect that people will have their phone with them or will get on Facebook and see a message or let you know of what their plans are. But thank God it was a good ending.
100%, I thought that he was definitely cross foul play.
When this first came on, we were in our office and I said, do you think he's fine or do you think he's dead?
I definitely thought he was dead.
And I said, no, I think that he's just gotten absorbed into this Anita. And you've always got that mate that meets someone and then suddenly they're just all them and then they go missing and they cut off all ties and then you don't see them until a month later on when they come up for air.
Yeah.
That's what I felt like had happened, but I was very surprised to see that he was found in Thailand. playing the bongos on the beach, completely unaware that the world is looking for him. How embarrassing. And how embarrassing.
It was because he's a Kiwi. He'd lived here for a few years, he was a Kiwi, and there were a lot of New Zealanders really banding together to look for him, and it was a travel blogger that eventually spotted him.
Yeah.
And he just go...
And said, hey, you know, people are looking for you. And he goes, no. He goes, I don't know anything about this at all. So
I'm just playing the bongos here on the beach.
Just, if I was him, Josh, if you're somehow listening.
We're happy that you're alive.
But how embarrassing. How embarrassing. I just feel like his friends who were all so worried about
him.
Yeah.
One of which was Aaron. He was on all the news.
He was the driving force behind the search campaign.
I wonder if Aaron was just that friend that worries too much. Like, you know what I mean? Like, maybe Josh is a bit... You know, he's
free.
A bit free.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe, you know, when someone's got that one friend that worries a bit too much and they get a little bit too serious too quickly.
I know,
but yet, it's
if
what
you do go missing, you want that friend. I had many years ago when I was living in Melbourne as a student, I had a phone call, got home to a message on my answering machine, and it was from my friend Julie. And she said, oh, if you don't hear from me in 24 hours, call the police, and hung up.
What?
Right? And so then you go, what do I do with that?
Yeah.
What do I do with that? So I didn't sleep at all. I wake up the next morning. I'm trying to call her. It was before the day of mobile phone. So there was no, I was ringing her home. There was no number, no answer. In the end, in the morning, I went around to her house and her car's in the driveway. So I knock on the door and she comes to the door and she's like, and she comes out and says, and like shuts the door behind us because she didn't want to wake her partner up. They'd been away in a country town for the weekend. They'd had a massive fight. She just said she was going to hitchhike home.
Yes.
That's when she placed the call to me from a phone box.
Yep.
And then what happened? She forgot that she'd called me. She went back. She decided she wasn't going to hitchhike. She went back. They kind of reconciled a little bit, drove back to Melbourne, went to bed and forgot about me.
What a message.
And
that.
I'm the one panicking.
Oh,
and she, it turns out everything was fine.
This is Nathan, Nat and Sean.
A great ending to the story of missing Perth man, who was missing in Bali.
Yeah.
His friends were very concerned. We found him playing the bongos on the beach in Thailand.
Hey. That's the sound of safety, everybody. We want to know if you've been in the scenario where people thought that you were missing and you weren't, or when you were looking for somebody.
And it turns out they were okay. Trent's in Currumbine. Hi, Trent.
Hi, how you going?
Hey, good, Trent.
Buddy. Who went missing?
Look, it's my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
She's a bit of a free spirit,
yeah.
And she's decided that she's going to take off to Tasmania on her own, camping.
Yes!
So I get a text message from her. Oh, my God, something terrible has just happened. Can't talk now. I'll ring you soon.
Oh, Trent!
Well, it turns out she's traveling down the west coast of Tasmania,
yeah,
and you don't get reception there.
Yeah, it's super remote, yeah.
I didn't hear from her for 3 days. Finally, I got in contact with her. She rang me from a payphone.
Yes.
And turns out that she'd encountered a flasher.
So sorry,
my God.
She'd seen a doodle, and then you didn't hear from her for 3 days, so you didn't know what had happened.
No idea.
Hilarious. Oh, Trent. Are you still together, Trent?
Yeah, still together.
Wow.
Hey, is she still a free spirit?
Yeah, she's in India at the moment.
Wow,
Trent. What is it like being with someone who's like that? Because if you're not the same and go off and doing, and she's happy to go off and do her own thing.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm kind of working full time, and she was at uni, so in a uni break, she kind of takes off. And,
yeah. Yeah, the 2 months she lives up in the tree at the backyard's a bit weird, but that's but you know, he loves her.
He does.
He loves her.
Wow, Trent, that's amazing.
Oh, great story. Thank you. Tracy's in Byford. Hi, Trace.
Morning.
Hey, Trace.
Who went missing, Tracy?
My 2.5-year-old daughter.
Oh.
How horrifying for a mother.
Did you find her on the beach playing bongos?
No, we found her in a cupboard. It took us nearly half an hour to find her. We had the whole... we were on holidays in Busselton, Geograph Bay, and we had the whole resort looking for her. We had all the staff. We were in the apartment screaming for her, where are you, where are you? She didn't come out. And eventually one of the guys went into one of the smallest cupboards, and there she was, just crawled, very terrified, because she thought she was going to get into so much trouble.
Because you're yelling her name.
And she's not just done it once, she's done it twice. So she's gone missing again a couple of years later, a bit older, and we had to get the police in because we really couldn't find her, and it was horrible. But now she's 17, and if she ever goes missing again, I'll murder her.
That's right. Wow. It will be foul play. It'll be in your hands.
We all go straight to that panic point, though, don't we? Because think about that. Nowadays, at a resort, if a kid goes missing, Matty McCann.
That's yeah, well, this is the thing, I mean? Exactly. And because it's unfamiliar territory as well.
His girlfriend going missing, Wolf Creek.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all just like things we've seen where it ends in the killing.
Yes.
Okay, this is Nathan, Nat and Sean.
Inspired by the very happy story that the guy that everybody thought was missing, left for dead in Bali.
Yeah, found on a beach in Thailand playing the bongos. We are talking about missing people that weren't really missing.
Jenny's in Frio. Hi, Jen.
Good morning. It's actually Ginny.
Hey, oh, Ginny.
I apologise.
I'm from Harry Potter.
Okay. Who went missing?
Our turtle Wilbur.
Oh, okay.
Your turtle.
My turtle Wilbur.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just getting that straight.
My daughter's turtle. Yes. So we used to live in East Rio, and this turtle needs sunshine every now and then for their shell to be healthy. So she took it outside with her, and she was out in the backyard, and forgot about it. And, of course, these things are very curious and rather adventurous.
Yes.
And went off for a little walk. Anyway, she came inside and then thought, oh, my God, where's Wilbur? Couldn't find him anywhere. We sent out a search party. Still couldn't find him. We even made...
What was the search perimeter? 2-metre radius? Wilbur's not going to particularly get too far.
Does a turtle come if you call it?
No. Okay. Not late. Yep. No. No, these things scurry away and they can hide in little sections that you can't find.
Yeah.
Anyway, we even made posters and I went around in, this was in Clayton Street in East Fremantle, and I put posters on every single lamppost I spoke to people in their gardens. So if you can imagine, I walked out of our house and I turned left and went all the way down, crossed the road at the very end and walked all the way back and then crossed the road and came right back. Do you know, this little critter, he walked from our backyard around the path, which is probably, 20 metres, down a step, under a gate. He turned left at the next part of the path, around, under the next path, down the driveway, across the road, and down the next person's driveway directly opposite us, which just happened to be the last house that I tried to look in. And there's this little old lady at the end of the driveway with a broom going, get away!
Get away! Like it's a leopard. Get away!
Getting attacked by this turtle.
And this little yappy dog is barking at her off.
Yes.
And this poor turtle is just looking at her going, help! What do I have?
Help!
Where am I going?
Wilbur did not say help. I'm just
Wilbur.
Going to put it out there. Wilbur.
You just don't know their accents.
Escaping turtle. Thank you, Jenny. Let's go to Angela in Seville Grove. Hi, Ange.
Hi,
Ange.
Who went missing, Ange?
It was my 60-year-old mother.
Okay, where did she go?
So she bought herself one of those old vans. You know, you do it up yourself with a kitchen and bed and all that, and took off up north. So rural, up way up north. We didn't know where she was going, but we knew she was heading off, and she bought herself an emergency beacon in case anything went wrong.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, you're all right. So about a week later, my brother got a phone call from America, and we're like, yeah, okay, whatever. And she'd set this beacon off. Apparently what she'd done had driven her van onto a rocky outcrop and got her van wedged on the rocks and couldn't get it off.
Yes.
So we didn't actually know that at the time. Anyway, so they said, don't worry, we're going to rescue her. And we thought, okay, well, we'll just leave it. A few days later, none of us
heard. We'll just leave it.
You are the worst child.
I know, but
we'll just leave it.
We knew she was being rescued.
Okay. Yeah, go back to what you're doing.
Yeah, go on.
Watch some Netflix.
So we thought, well, a couple of days later, we thought, well, we better,
check up on our mother.
Our missing mother.
She was every couple of days posting on Facebook. We thought, well, she hasn't posted. We better try and find her.
So
eventually we're ringing saying, who anyone heard from her? And then we found out that she was actually on a cattle station. She'd been rescued. She had no idea that none of us had actually been told, had been told that she was, stuck.
Oh, to be completely honest, you really care by the sounds of it. So
maybe not. And she was having a great time.
On a cattle station.
She was getting actual attention from people. was. It was a great thing. It's a great time she was having.
She's a very independent person.
Oh, really?
So yeah, she has to be. You guys don't care. No. This is Nathan, Nat, and Sean. No.